The Guthrie Process, a play for radio by David Wade, with William Fox as Hamilton Guthrie.
Once upon a time there was a man. His name was Peter Edwards. He had a very good job and a very good girl. Her name was Helen Mackenzie.
Helen, darling.
What is it, my love?
Are you happy?
Oh, yes. And you?
Very happy. Very happy indeed.
Helen's father, Sir Alistair, owned the company for which Peter worked. Mackenzie Developments, it was called. Limited, but not very.
Good morning, Sir Alistair.
Ah, oh, Peter. Come in, sit you down.
Thank you, sir.
How are you, then? And how's that girl of mine?
I'm fine. We're both fine.
Looking after her, eh?
You can count on me for that.
Now, I want to talk to you about this Wingate contract.
He was a generous man, old Mackenzie, and if from time to time it crossed his mind to wonder why young Edwards didn't just marry his daughter and have done, he would say to himself,
"Ah, well, there's a time, there's a place."
As it was, Helen clearly found life good, and that to Mackenzie was important. His other daughter, Helen's twin Diana, had been, well, less fortunate.
"I will not be patronized all the time."
"Girl, I've bent over backwards to avoid patronizing you."
"Then I wish you'd just stand up straight, even if I can't."
"Oh, for God's sake."
Poor Diana. Some misfortune of conception or of birth had left her crippled, her body twisted like an old root. Her face, however, was a replica of Helen's, a bitter replica.
"Anyway, I'm leaving home."
"I see. It's probably for the best."
"And don't send looking for me. I can look out for myself."
"I'm sure you'll do it very well."
"Oh, you're so tolerant. Don't you feel anything?"
At certain times, there's no satisfying some people. So Diana left home and never communicated with her father again. Few people knew of her existence, not even Peter Edwards. His life remained unclouded, and it was expected that he would do well. Mind you, he was the sort of man, young Edwards, to whom success came easily.
"Aye, too easily, maybe. A mite complacent, that young man. Doesn't appreciate his own good luck. I've been thinking it wouldn't hurt him to move around a bit, try his hand at something else, another company, broaden his experience. Come in."
"Morning, Sir Alistair."
"Ah, Peter, look, I'm rather tied up at the minute. Come back later, will you, please?"
"But we have an appointment to discuss the..."
"Listen, I said later, if you don't mind."
"Well, look, I'm sorry, but..."
"I'll send for you."
"Just as you wish."
"Complacent. But that shook him.
And so it came about that for no reason he could quite admit to himself, there came upon Peter Edwards the feeling that things were no longer right, that possibly he ought to look around. He began to ask himself if maybe life, with a capital L, were not passing him by, and whether in his present company, the only one he'd known, the opportunities were quite what they'd been cracked up to be. In short, a great restlessness came upon him.
"Happy, darling?"
"Of course. Why do you keep on asking?"
And that is where our story, most stories, begin.
"Ladies and gentlemen, the curtain will rise in 2 minutes. In 2 minutes."
"Peter! Peter!"
"For God's sake, where have you been?"
"So sorry, darling. I got stuck in a traffic jam."
"Oh, come on."
"Stalls to your right. Circle to your left."
"This way."
"Who are you talking to?"
"Talking to?"
"As I came in. A man. Look, there he is, just there."
"Oh, him. That's Piers Trevelyan."
"Do I know him?"
"No, I doubt it. I met him last week at a convention."
"Who is he?"
"Oh, I don't know. Some sort of consultant."
"Tickets, please. All tickets. To your right, sir."
"Peter, are you looking for another job?"
"And what makes you ask?"
"The papers, mainly. Bits missing from the situation's vacant."
"You're just testing the market. Anything wrong in that?"
"Nothing, but it's nice to know."
Programme, please. "I thought of asking Pierce to dinner next Wednesday, perhaps."
"Just as you like."
"Have you an objection?"
"Should I have?"
"The curtain will rise in 1 minute. 1 minute."
"Ah, Piers. You found us, then."
"You live a very long way up."
"Come in."
"Thank you." Smart. Trendy."
"Thank you. Let me take your coat."
"You wouldn't have a hanger, I suppose."
"Of course."
"It does preserve the shape."
"Now, come and get a drink."
"Ah, this must be Mrs..."
"Piers, this is Miss Mackenzie. Helen. Darling, this is Piers Trevelyan."
"How do you do?"
"Hello, Helen. We've met before, I think."
"I think not.
On second thoughts, I must be mistaken.
Piers, what's it going to be?
Well, scotch, I think.
With ice?
No, thanks. I think it's cool enough already, don't you?
Darling?
Scotch.
No ice?
Yes, ice. Rather a lot.
More coffee?
No, thanks. I shan't sleep if I do.
A drop more brandy, then.
Well, maybe, just a drop. How kind. Helen, I don't think I've persuaded you.
I don't think you have.
No, please understand, I've not a thing against your father's company. It's a first-class organization, highest standards, all that sort of thing. But you just have to face it. These days, a man must move around, chance his arm, go after challenges. I mean, if he doesn't...
What?
Well, how do people know his worth?
They should be able to tell. I'm sure I can.
Ah, but then women have an instinct for such things, don't they? Terrifying, I always think. Of course, each man to his own challenge. Some people would contend that a beautiful woman is a challenge in herself. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't challenge anyone.
Do you not? No, but the point is, a man must be prepared. We live in dangerous times. Some most reliable companies have been known to fail. Oh, yes. A man who finds himself on the market stands a better chance if he's knocked around a bit, got his hands dirty.
I'm sure you're right.
I know I am. But I'm keeping you up.
No, not in the least.
I think I am. Miss Mackenzie is yawning. Good night, Helen. A fabulous dinner. I hope we shall meet again.
Good night.
I'll just see Piers down.
All right.
But don't forget your coat.
Thank you. Who pays for all that, the flat and so forth?
Oh, I do.
Quite a commitment. They grow, commitments, don't you find? I'm glad I don't live as high as this.
Why not?
I think it's dangerous to live too high.
Here we are.
I fear your Helen doesn't care for me.
Oh, I wouldn't go as far as that. She's...
Particular?
Antisocial.
Why aren't you married? You don't mind me asking?
No. I don't know why not.
Must say, I'm surprised at you, knocking off the boss's daughter, or how I raise myself from failure to success. Oh, don't be offended, please.
I'm not.
Does he realize what's going on?
Yes.
And doesn't care? Well, well.
Oh, I suppose he thinks I'll make an honest woman of her.
Will you?
I've not yet decided. The present setup gives a sense of independence.
Of course. We all need that. She is extremely beautiful. I take it then you are quite seriously looking round.
Yes. The trouble is, I want to do it without old man Mackenzie finding out. Which means I can't keep going off for interviews. I want to face him with a fait accompli.
Quite. I'll put you in touch with someone, a consultant.
Oh. I thought you were a consultant.
Me? Oh, no. Taxi!
Last. What is your line, then?
I'm a sort of contact man. This chap would suit you very well. He has an entree with all the companies that count. He specializes in cases such as yours.
In what way?
A quick and accurate placement. Confidentiality guaranteed.
What's the name?
Guthrie. Hamilton Guthrie Associates.
I've never heard of him.
He doesn't advertise. Headhunters, they call them.
Oh.
But soft, we are observed.
I beg your pardon?
Up there. The anxious face at the high-lighted window gazing down. Tender, concerned. Oh, you lucky man. Taxi! Good night, Peter. Pleasant dreams.
Good night.
And so it came about that the next day Peter Edwards rang up Piers Trevelyan to confirm his interest in an early meeting with Hamilton Guthrie Associates. And Piers Trevelyan, in his office as a sort of contact man, was pleased to communicate this item of news immediately to Mr. Guthrie at his rather splendid premises, situated in the best part of town. Here, with his customary efficiency, the said Hamilton Guthrie promptly dictated an invitation.
Kindly confirm that these arrangements are convenient, but if not, an alternative appointment can be made. Yours, etc. All right, Mrs. Briggs?
Yes, Mr. Guthrie?
He was a spare man, Hamilton Guthrie, and of little more than medium height. but he had what might be termed presence, in the sense that when he was around, you sometimes rather wished he might be absent. His secretary and confidential assistant, Mrs. Briggs, was a woman also of some presence, though without the qualification, except that when she stood and moved, even her remarkably elegant clothes could not conceal the iron on her leg, nor compensate for the grotesque effect of a severe limp. It is also worth observing that had you been able to see her, you would certainly have been struck by the extraordinary resemblance to... But no, we'll be coming to that in a minute.
I'd be obliged if you just read back what I've given you, Mrs. Briggs.
Dear Mr. Edwards, I understand from a Mr. Piers Trevelyan that you are possibly seeking a new appointment. It so happens that my company has been retained in the strictest confidence to fill a high executive position for a well-known international organization. This is a post calling for a man of exceptional ability and offering commensurate opportunities and rewards. The few details I have of you lead me to believe that you may possess the necessary qualities. There is...
That's a good line, an excellent line.
There is one point which I must emphasize. Owing to the extremely demanding nature of the job, my clients have stipulated that they will only appoint a single man. You say nothing of your status, but provided that...
Have we no background on this fellow, Mrs. Briggs?
I told you, Mr. Guthrie, only Mr. Trevelyan's notes.
Trevelyan, remind me to take it up with him. The question of his staff work, most unsatisfactory. Carry on, please.
Nothing of your status. But provided you satisfy this condition, and will continue to do so, might I suggest a meeting at this office at 10 a.m. next Monday, April 8th. Might I also ask that, as I am bound in this matter by the strictest confidence, you will not at this stage disclose our meeting to any third party whatsoever. A career record form is enclosed, which you should complete and bring with you to our meeting. Kindly confirm...
All right. That's fine. Get it off and just check the marital status position with the registrar.
Yes, Mr. Guthrie. There is just one point.
Mm?
This Mr. Edwards works for Mackenzie's. I did once have dealings with Mackenzie's.
You never told me.
Well, no, it never came to anything, but...
You mean you know this Edwards man and he knows you?
I'm almost sure we never met, but just in case, it might be better if someone else received him.
I'll do it myself. You take a good look at him on the monitor. If you know him, flash me. And I'll fetch the coffee in as well.
Thank you, Mr. Guthrie.
What sort of dealings with Mackenzie and Mrs. Briggs?
I went for a job.
They're careful whom they pick.
Aren't you, Mr. Guthrie?
My standards are different. There's nothing else you haven't told me, is there, Mrs. Briggs?
Nothing.
I hope not. I'm pleased with you, Mrs. Briggs. You picked the job up very well.
That day was a Friday. On the Saturday morning, Peter Edwards received the letter you've just heard. So on the following Monday, when he came into breakfast, he was dressed with something more than his usual degree of care.
What's all this in aid of?
Nothing in particular.
It's an interview, isn't it?
How did you know?
Oh, darling, really. Mind you, you could have said. Does Father know?
No, I'll tell him in good time. Not that I imagine he'll lose any sleep.
What's that supposed to mean? He does have other interests, you know. What's wrong in discussing...
I don't want his other interests. I can't spend all my life working for one organization, not even for Mackenzie's.
Has this anything to do with Piers Trevelyan?
But what if it has?
Has it?
No.
What job are you going for?
I don't know.
You could...
I'm seeing a consultant, he hasn't said.
Is that usual?
Perfectly. The whole thing is in the strictest confidence. And that's one reason why I haven't mentioned it. I'll tell you about it later.
There is going to be a later, then?
What do you mean?
You know.
But...
Why not change me as well? Why not? You can't spend all your life living with one woman.
Oh, don't be a fool.
Peter, what's the matter with us? What's gone wrong?
Wrong? I don't do anything. I don't achieve anything. My job, you, everything. Sheer nepotism.
That isn't true.
I've got it made, haven't I?
Oh, darling, when did my father ever show you the slightest favour?
Oh, sure, he takes good care not to. He takes very good care.
Of course he does.
Oh, no, I mean, he knows. I can tell it by the way he looks at me, by the way he fobs me off.
What does he know?
That I'm not making the grade, that he's backed the wrong man.
I don't believe
it. Ask him. Oh, I must go.
Peter, be careful.
That's what I am being.
Don't I even get a kiss?
Sorry.
See you later, then.
Yes. Yes. Well now, Mr. Edwards, anything we haven't covered then? Anything you'd like to add?
I believe I've told you everything.
Yes, date of birth, nationality at birth and now, number of children, no children.
I said I'm not married.
Cela, as they say, n'empêche. Parents both deceased, sure?
Of course.
Well, it's not always easy to tell. You typed your form of application. Why?
It's easier to read.
Or more difficult. Here, take this. Write this down. There is no art to find the mind's construction in the face. Got it?
Mind's
construction in the face. Makes sense to you?
More or less.
Believe it?
I haven't thought.
Let me save you the trouble. It's rubbish. It exemplifies traditional human pessimism. I can find the mind's construction in the face. Oh, yes. I can find it in a lot of things. Let's have a look at what you've written. Much as I would have predicted.
What?
Marginal autism in early childhood, receding. Some Oedipal emergence, rather slight. Too slight. Are you sure you're not married?
Certain. Did you say autism?
That's right. Pathological withdrawal.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes persists into adult life as a reluctance to mix with the herd.
Well, I admit I may appear a shade withdrawn, but pathologically...
All withdrawal is pathological, don't you think?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as that.
You will. Yeah?
I don't know him.
Sure?
Absolutely.
Fine. I'll ring for coffee presently. Yes, as I was saying, what are you doing?
Well, I'm sorry to have wasted your time.
Please sit down, Mr. Edwards.
Look!
Sit, please.
Oh, what's the point? You've made it abundantly clear that you regard me as inadequate.
That I never said. I regard you as entirely adequate. A serviceable mechanism. Excellent raw material.
But in your letter, you said...
Men of exceptional ability.
Yes.
At which you thought, that's me.
No, I mean, it was an attractive letter. Challenging.
It brings them in.
As regards my ability, that's for you to judge.
No, quite. Mrs. Briggs, fetch in that coffee, will you please? You see, Edwards, my organization is retained by some, if not all, of the country's industrial leaders to find what they, in their simple-minded way, are pleased to call men of outstanding ability. Men, that is, dedicated to the job in hand with no other thought than to live it, eat it, sleep it. However, and this is one of the realizations that comes to all consultants sooner or later. Come in. Ah, Mrs. Briggs.
Hello.
You are acquainted with Mrs. Briggs?
No. No, just for a moment. She reminded me
of who?
A girl I used to know. Oh, it was years ago. Forgive me. We've never met.
Mrs. Briggs is not easily mistaken. This gentleman is Mr. Edwards.
How do you do? Sugar?
Please. Thank you very much.
I'm just on the point of explaining to Mr. Edwards what we're looking for in the Mansfield International vacancy. I think you might sit in. It's all experience. You've no objection, Edwards, I suppose?
None at all.
Mrs. Briggs is a soul of discretion.
Oh, I can see that.
Can you now? Are you sure you're not married?
I told you.
It's this Oedipal trace. It should be more developed. But if you really are certain...
Oh, for God's sake, I ought to know.
My dear fellow, most married men never find out. Where was I?
Oh, one of the realizations.
Ah, yes. What your consultant has to realize is this. That men such as he is asked to find have a sort of scarcity. You're with me so far?
Yes.
Well, drink your coffee. Don't let it get cold. All right, is it?
Delicious.
Yes. The point I wish to make is that over the years, I found myself increasingly disinclined to accept this situation. Last consultancy I worked for, the greater part of my time was devoted to the submission of applicants whose brows receded and whose knuckles grazed the ground. I was obliged to pass them on with explanations. The perfect man does not exist. We are all merely human and other such defeatist talk. Therefore, I entered business on my own. I approached the problem in a more positive way. I said, if these chaps are so hard to find, why then? I shall simply have to manufacture them.
Manufacture.
It's all a matter of refined technology, a process of my own. Mr. Edwards, you'll do just splendidly for Mansfield International by the time I've finished with you.
I think perhaps I ought to be going.
Relax. You are going. Going out. Just smooth his brow, Mrs. Briggs. All right, Ron. He's all yours. Come in, will you? That's the ticket. Wheel the lad away.
You got his worksheet, Mr. Guthrie?
On the desk.
Okay. Right then, for a Turkish feet.
A Mackenzie man. I've always wanted one of them. Funny. I expected something more impressive. Who's next?
You've no one else till this afternoon.
Good. You've never seen the processing, I think?
No, Mr. Guthrie.
Then come along and watch them wiring Edwards up.
Now, while all this was going on, Helen Mackenzie sat at the high window of her elegant apartment and looked out over the city. A strange unease lay upon her, and toward midday, sure that Peter must by now be at his desk, she telephoned his office. But he wasn't there, and nothing had been heard of him. Nor would be, for at that moment Peter Edwards lay, trance-like, upon a couch, in a room forming part of the rather unexpectedly extensive back premises of Hamilton Guthrie Associates. Outside this room stood Guthrie himself and Mrs. Briggs. They watched the activity within through a panel in the door, and on this door was inscribed Lobal Epileptic Thought and Habit Eraser. This somewhat cumbrous title the Guthrie organization found convenient to abbreviate. They called it Lethe.
There he lies, the late Peter Edwards, tomorrow's George Davenport.
What are they doing to him?
Locating the electrodes on the skull. It's a fiddly job. The cerebral interactions are so fine. To wipe the slate clean is by no means easy.
You remember nothing?
Not a thing.
What happens next?
We wipe the slate, and then we fill it up again.
How fill it up?
Alpha, just down the corridor.
What's Alpha?
Come and see. Alpha, activator for the long-term programming of human abilities. Aram. Have the program set for Davenport?
Just testing for impact and interaction, Mr. Guthrie.
Good. We'll wait outside and see him in. Sit, Mrs. Briggs. You mustn't tire that poor leg of yours. Is something wrong?
When you say fill it up...
I mean just that. Oh, dear, it isn't difficult. The average pass consists of large gaps and even larger inventions. Add to that the compulsion that is part of man's nature to account for himself, and the job's half done.
But what about his relatives, his friends?
Close relatives are difficult. Parents, wives. That is why a Guthrie man will invariably be single and an orphan. But aunts, uncles, friends, mere friends, those are easily put off.
So when he leaves this place, the Guthrie man is friendless?
Certainly not. That would be most inadvisable. Where is a man's identity if not in his friends, his family? No, no. Now take Edwards, Davenport. He'll find 100 men and women who recall him perfectly, and he them. A widowed mother, resident in Broadstairs. A father, decomposing these 4 years or more in Putney Vale. It's all been written in. Perhaps, Mrs. Briggs, you have been underestimating the scale of my activities. There is one other point, Mrs. Briggs, which at this stage should be made clear.
Oh, yes?
I take it that you are satisfied with your position here, your privileged position.
Yes.
There's no need for me to remind you of the wretchedness from which I raised you up?
None.
Good. We are talking of the past and of new memories. What Guthrie men remember is as good as most, but it would not bear close investigation. Therefore, it must not be investigated. Each Guthrie man is programmed so that nothing would induce him to look at his origins. And to that program, you are linked.
Me?
Your face is very lovely, Mrs. Briggs. Oh, a Madonna. Your body is twisted like a vine. On the one hand, you attract. We want attraction. It keeps our products loyal and brings new business. On the other hand, for want of a better word, you repel. In short, for every Guthrie man, you are the stimulus to reinforce a programmed attitude. You keep him on the primrose path.
I see.
Cheer up, Mrs. Briggs. At least I didn't manufacture you. If I had, how would you ever know? Ah, there goes Edwards.
What on earth are they doing to
him?
All
right, quite all right. They're just regressing him. He doesn't feel a thing. He returns to square one.
Oh, I see.
You'll soon get used to it.
You haven't told me what's in there.
In where?
across the corridor.
Oh, that's Omega, our reject section. Like to see?
No, thanks.
Another day. Omega is where your predecessor finished up. I found her fraternizing with a product. Fraternizing is forbidden. It encourages products to explore their origins. But look, here's Edwards now. At least not Edwards, but a perfect blank. Don't you find him rather beautiful? I wonder who it was that he mistook you for. What was the name he used?
I didn't catch.
Now we shall never know. Not that it matters.
Peter Edwards lay in Alpha all that Monday afternoon and more, for to remake a man is no light business. The evening came, and in the dusk, Helen, still without news, sat in her apartment all alone and waited for the doorbell for a call. At last, since neither came, she rose, walked over to the telephone, and dialed.
Hello?
Father?
Helen, hello.
Father, listen, you've not seen Peter, have you?
No. Is something wrong?
He's not... Oh, wait, there's someone at the door. It may be him. Hold on.
Oh, Mr. Trevelyan.
Piers, please. Is Peter in?
No.
Oh, dear.
He's not back.
Working hard, eh? That's the ticket.
What do you want?
I won't keep you, but when he gets back, he might like to ring me. I'm not sure he has my private number. Here's my card. I'm usually at home. Good night.
Good night.
Are you there, Father?
I'm here, yes.
It wasn't Peter. Listen, he went out this morning. He went out after another job.
I see.
He hasn't got back. Father, can you hear me?
I heard you.
Well, say something. Father!
Listen, my darling, listen carefully. I'm not surprised. I think this thing was on the cards. In fact, I'll say more than that. I believe it was high time, Helen.
High time? For whom? You mean for him?
I meant for one and all.
You haven't sacked him, have you?
I have not.
Then what's become of him?
I don't know.
Father, I think he's run out on me. I don't know, he's been so strange, so cold. I don't know what to do.
Sweetheart, I can't talk more just now. I have to go. My car's waiting for me. I must go.
Father!
Helen, I've got to go. Good night now.
The next morning, at 10 o'clock exactly, two things occurred. A certain George Davenport, whom you and I might recognize as Peter Edwards, marched out of a small but smart bachelor flat in a very good part of town. There was nothing surprising about this, at least not for George Davenport, who remembered perfectly many details of an agreeable 2-year residence at the same address, and of many other things besides. He hailed a taxi and asked to be driven to the offices of Hamilton Guthrie Associates. Also at 10 o'clock, there stepped into the Guthrie offices the well-known industrialist Sir William Boulding, chairman of Mansfield International. It was Sir William's purpose, after a preliminary chat with Mr. Guthrie, to interview this fellow Davenport for the managing directorship of one of the most important of his group's many subsidiaries.
Sir William will see you right away, Mr. Davenport. Let me take your things.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Is something wrong?
Wrong?
The way you're looking at me.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just have this impression that we've met before.
But we have. You came to interview, remember?
Of course, it must be that.
Mr. Davenport.
Ah, Davenport, good of you to come. Allow me to present Sir William, this is...
Good God, Billy!
George, my dear fellow.
But the name did ring a bell, naturally. But never for one minute did I imagine... Oh, well, you've done all right for yourself.
Oh, might say the same about you. Good heavens, it must be, what, 10 years?
Oh, more than that. Vienna, 1959.
Excuse me, gentlemen, my presence is superfluous.
1959, is that so? Why, you don't look a day older.
Well, you're wearing rather well yourself.
Very gratifying.
Sir William is a Guthrie man?
I told you, didn't I? A lot of people know George Davenport, and he knows them. Switch on the monitor, Mrs. Briggs. Vision only. Look at them chattering away. What would you say they're doing, Mrs. Briggs?
In what way?
Each one confirms the other's program, reinforces it. Every Guthrie man is part of a self-validating system with
no way out. And the really excruciating joke is that he believes it to be real.
Mr. Guthrie, Mr. Guthrie, look, Mr. Davenport, he's coming to the door.
Switch off, quick. Forgotten something, Davenport?
Mrs. Briggs, your name's not Helen, is it?
No.
No. I just had the idea it might have been. Silly of me, I beg your pardon.
Helen. That was it. Who is this Helen, Mrs. Briggs?
I've no idea.
She'll have to watch that one. Tougher than I thought. Mind you, it's not uncommon. Disconnected traces of the past. But they disappear. Environmental pressures see to that.
And so, in spite of this apparent defect, George Davenport, late Peter Edwards, entered the service of Mansfield International as managing director of an important subsidiary. In the meantime, Helen had begun a careful search, for it had occurred to her that she had, in a sense, run out on Peter. Oh, yes, he had been difficult, but she had told herself he had no right to be. There was no future in that. Accordingly, she followed every avenue, except that for some reason, some reluctance, she omitted Piers Trevelyan. After all, hadn't Peter expressly denied the man's complicity? Helen searched and found nothing.
God, where is he? Oh, Father.
Hello, lass. Well?
He's not come back.
And you?
I've done everything I know how. I've searched his papers, his clothes. There's not a letter, not a note, nothing.
Tried the police?
They took particulars. Lots of people disappear, they say. Oh, don't stand there. Come in.
Thanks.
Here, let me take your things. Go in and sit down.
I'll have a whiskey, if I may.
Help yourself.
And you?
All right.
Who did Peter go to see?
A consultant. That's all I know.
Well, that helps. These merchants have to register. The licensing authorities have lists.
I know. I have them here.
Smart girl. You've done a thorough job.
Thanks. Not that you left me much alternative.
You think it was up to me?
He's your employee, or was.
Quite. And therefore free to take another job. He's your lover, and that's rather a different matter. Look, I could have said, here's a new assignment. And he'd have done it, oh yes, with one eye on his old job. Whereas whatever he does now, he meant to do it. And when he comes back to me, to you, I think he'll have a little more, what shall I say, appreciation?
He is coming back?
I can't say.
But you just did say.
All I know is I never like to lose a man.
I see. And what about a woman?
Sorry?
Diana. You lost her. Or did she have to go?
You could put it like that.
Why did she?
Call it incompatibility.
And will she come back? Have you even looked?
Of course. Last time I heard, she was in prison. I don't think she wanted to be found. Do you imagine I don't care? But I could weep blood, and what would be the use?
Father, what am I to do?
Go on looking, lass.
Oh, but where?
I wonder if one of these headhunter laddies has been after him.
These what?
Headhunters. They call themselves consultants. They never advertise. They work by recommendation, contact, espionage. The old boy network. Nothing committed to paper.
Do you know a man called Piers Trevelyan?
Trevelyan?
Wait, I have his card. Here, look.
Piers Trevelyan. Never heard of him. Does he hunt heads?
I don't know what he does, but I intend to find out.
To Helen, it was as if since Peter's vanishing, 6 days had gone. To George Davenport, however, it appeared that he had been in office a whole year or more. The seasons had come and gone. In the files, copies of his correspondence stretched back across the months. He visited his widowed mum in Broadstairs and listened patiently as she rambled on of times gone by and showed him photos of a baby said to be himself. And now, today, beneath his chairman's all-approving eye, George Davenport sat in conference with his executives. He was assured, at ease. He was who he had always been.
And so I think from this point on it should be quite plain sailing.
If I might just come in here.
Yes, of course, Sir William.
The whole scheme is dependent on appointing a research director.
Yes, quite so, but I suggest that that's a matter you and I should talk about just now.
Oh, by all means.
Well, gentlemen, if there are no further questions, that'll be all for this morning. Thank you very much.
Very nice. You were a real pleasure to watch, Davenport.
Thank you,
sir. But I remember you always did know how to handle a meeting.
Well, these boys are exceptionally cooperative, you know.
Ah, they're a good lot.
What?
Well, I was going to say I flatter myself, but of course we have Hamilton Guthrie to thank for most of them.
Yes, of course.
Mind you, it was I who retained Guthrie in the first place. Oh, yes. I imagine we'll be approaching him again.
For this research man?
Unless you have a better idea.
No, I'll ring him now.
I get the feeling you don't care for Guthrie.
Care for him? Oh, he's a very capable fellow. I've nothing against him. Get me Hamilton Guthrie Associates, please.
Oh, I take it you're quite happy with us, George.
Of course. This is my niche. I live it, eat it, sleep it.
There's nothing on your mind.
Hello. Hamilton Guthrie? Yeah, I'd like to speak to Mr. Guthrie, please. He's not. When will he be back? Yes, do that. Davenport. George Davenport. Is that Mrs. Briggs? It is. I wonder if you'd have dinner with me sometime. Well, tonight. Another time, perhaps.
Do you think that was wise?
Wise? I don't know.
You're their client. Could be awkward. Besides...
What?
You can do better for yourself than that, I'm sure.
Don't you find Mrs. Briggs rather beautiful?
Beautiful?
Her face is quite exquisite.
Maybe you've not noticed her legs.
Well, yes.
There you are, then. First things first is what I always say. I'd leave that one alone. Well, what is it?
You asked if anything were on my mind, should there be?
Not as far as I'm concerned.
Then what did you ask?
Well, I don't know. You just looked as if there might be.
Well, nothing. I assure you. The thing's a perfect total blank.
Oh, come on and get some lunch. We'll talk about your speech.
What speech?
The Confederation dinner.
Oh, they've bought it then.
Oh, they've done better than that, lad. They're going to put you on the telly.
And over a celebratory bottle of excellent wine, George Davenport's peculiar taste in women was more or less forgotten. He had been greatly honoured, singled out, to speak to that august body, the Confederation of British Manufacturers, and nothing stops the mouth of doubt more surely than success, for a time at any rate. The evening of her father's visit, Helen took her reluctance and Piers Trevelyan's card and went on foot to the address inscribed upon it. This proved to be a slightly seedy place, and Helen realized that this consorted perfectly with Piers. His exquisitely stylish clothes and odour of expensive toilet water concealed, she rather thought, a man who did not often wash. She rang the bell and waited for a rusty door-answering device to speak.
Who is it?
Helen Mackenzie.
Get that. Come on up.
Helen went in. The door swung to, but just before it latched, a man sprang up the steps, prevented it, then quietly entered after her. He watched as Helen climbed the stairs and glimpsed Trevelyan looking down upon her.
What a pleasant surprise.
Is it? A surprise, I mean.
Well, you know, cast your bread upon the waters and it comes back in the form of the most delicious cheesecake. Forgive me. Let's just say I hope to see you again. Come in.
The instant he heard the door, the man below ran lightly up the stairs and waited in the shadow of a landing just above Trevelyan's flat.
Why don't you come right in and take off your coat and make yourself at home?
Thanks, but I prefer to stay here and to stand.
Please yourself. I like you wherever you are.
Where's Peter?
I beg your pardon. Peter, whatever do you mean?
I think you know.
My dear Helen...
Miss Mackenzie to you.
I neither know nor care where Peter is. Why should I?
You sent him to a consultant.
Did he not tell you who? Well, far be it from me to meddle in the confidences...
Unless the information has its price.
Most things have that.
How much?
Oh, when you're ready, darling, I can wait. But why so scrupulous? If you can play the whore with one man, you can do it with another... Given such necessity... Dear, dear. Anyone would take you for a respectable married woman.
So I am.
No, sweetie, I checked. Piers does his homework. Well, some of it. Peter Edwards is not married to you or anyone else.
But I'm married to him.
Remarkable. Doesn't it take two?
You understand nothing.
Oh, yes. I understand. I have you where I want you, dear.
Go to hell!
Arrivederci. Oh, I'm an honest man. You pay, I'll deliver. And much good it'll do you. Who's that?
Mr. Trevelyan.
Yes?
Might I have a word with you, please, sir?
Who are you?
Oh, so sorry. My card.
Jason Investigations.
That's correct. Missing persons a speciality.
I have nothing to say to you.
That's a pity, sir. I have a lot to say to you. Just kindly step inside.
And Piers Trevelyan leaves our story here, at least in his own person. One afternoon about this time, another scene was being played in which young Peter Edwards, now Davenport and not so young, was also the main theme. Its actors, Mrs. Briggs, Hamilton Guthrie, and a tape recorder.
Yes, do that.
Who is it speaking?
Davenport, George Davenport.
Why couldn't you ring off?
Is that Mrs. Briggs?
Yes.
I wonder if you'd have dinner with me sometime.
When?
Suffering poses.
Well, tonight.
No. I mean, I can't. Sorry.
Another time, perhaps.
No. I don't know.
You see? You actually led him on.
I didn't.
Oh, you mean you put him off? Did I not make your duties clear? Is there no one I can trust?
He brought the subject up. I was taken off my guard.
Excuses! Mrs. Briggs, when I found you, you were, how shall I put it, far advanced on the road to self-destruction. Not only have I brought you back, but I have given you power. Power over men and the comforts of this world. Shall I take them away?
Perhaps you are not quite aware that in the case of Peter Edwards, now known as George Davenport, there is reason to believe that the Guthrie process has not fully taken.
I am aware of it. Moreover, Sir William is aware of it. Brilliant but withdrawn, that's what he says of Davenport. And that's not all. Did you know a woman rang inquiring for him? Oh, yes. This Helen, no doubt. Naturally, I denied all knowledge and she has nothing to go on. Nevertheless, somebody is looking for him. In the circumstances, I see no alternative but... Guthrie speaking. Davenport, how very nice to hear your voice. I was just thinking of you. Director of Research. But of course, why not call round and we'll talk about it? No time like the present. Oh, I see. What speech is this? Ah, yes. Aren't you to be televised? My dear fellow, congratulations. Make it tomorrow, then. The earlier the better. 10 is fine. Splendid. Goodbye. Mr. Davenport is preparing his speech for this evening's dinner of the Confederation of British Manufacturers. That should keep him out of mischief till we meet. What a shame, when he has so many excellent qualities.
What do you have in mind?
Oh, I've no option but to put him into Omega.
Kill him?
Kill him, my dear Mrs. Briggs. You take me for a common murderer.
But my predecessor...
She is not dead, oh dear me, no. Well, not in the prosaic sense. Omega induces a state of permanent mental disorder. And after that, what a man says or does is neither here nor there. Sit down, Mrs. Briggs. Sit down a moment. On this occasion, I shall overlook your lapse. All right?
Yes, Mr. Guthrie.
Don't do it again. Now have Trevelyan brought in, will you please? His judgment is no longer to be relied upon.
Yes, Mr. Guthrie. Is he to go to Omega?
No need. No one misses the Trevelyans of this world, so why bother to account for them? Courage, Mrs. Briggs. Remember, Guthrie men are products. High-quality consumer durables. We must expect the odd rejects, and for the sake of our standards, treat them accordingly.
And Hamilton Guthrie tidied up his desk and went off to his club in high good humour, secure in the knowledge that he had, as usual, forestalled all possibilities of disaster. As for Mrs. Briggs, she went off to her flat and sat disquieted in the dark. For some reason which she could not name, the notion of destroying Davenport affected her. It even crossed her mind to warn him. Perhaps this was because alone of all Guthrie's clients, he had seen her as a woman, had called her, accidentally perhaps, by a name almost forgotten. That night, and for the first time in many years, Mrs. Briggs, formerly Diana Mackenzie, thought about her home. Meantime, Helen also sat at home. Her visit to Piers Trevelyan had been her last hope, and she had made a mess of it. The daylight faded out across the city. The lights came up, when suddenly...
Father?
Only me, sorry.
Have you...
Where's your television set?
My
television... there. Where does it turn on?
Father, what are you...
Turn it on.
Is this some sort of joke?
Shh. Wait.
I haven't turned the volume up.
No, leave it. Here it comes.
Who is that man?
Don't you recognize him?
No. Oh, my God. It can't be.
But it is.
It's Peter. Why is he so thin and pale? And who's that man in front of him?
In front?
Someone standing right in front of him. Isn't there?
That's one way of putting it. The man in front is called George Davenport. Turn up the sound.
What I'm saying is this, that we must foster in ourselves that singleness of purpose, that entire dedication to the job, which in every human endeavour is the only true assurance of success.
Somebody's crying.
That's Peter Edwards.
What?
As a rather remarkable man I know is fond of saying, we have to live it, eat it, sleep it. We have to realise that this world in which we find ourselves, this world of industry, of technology, demands of those who enter it nothing less than the totality of their effort. For it is only by such effort in such a field that man will at last attain the goal of his age-old pursuit. I refer, of course, to the pursuit of happiness.
What's he doing, for God's sake? What's happened to him? Where is he?
Turn that thing off. Sit down. I'll tell you what I know.
Early the very next morning, Helen, all alone, set off across the city for the premises of an important subsidiary of Mansfield International. There, high up on the 17th floor, was the office of the managing director, known to his subordinates as Mr. George Davenport.
Your car is waiting, Mr. Davenport.
Thank you.
And here's the file on the research directorship.
Ah, yes, good girl. How am I off for time?
You ought to leave at once. Oh, excuse me, there's someone in my office.
I wish to speak to Mr. Davenport.
I'm afraid Mr. Davenport is not available.
Is he in there?
He is not available. If you wish to... Look, I'm very sorry, but... Ow!
Mrs. Brook...
Peter!
I beg your pardon?
Peter Edwards.
And my name is George Davenport.
So they keep saying, but it's not. What's happened to you?
Well, nothing has happened to me. I don't know who you think you are. I've never seen you in my life.
I'm Helen. Helen Mackenzie. And you're Peter Edwards.
Now stop calling me that. I'm Davenport. George Davenport.
Look, I know. I know that's what you think, but it isn't true. Don't you remember me at all?
Curiously enough...
Go on. Do try. It was only last week, your interview.
Interview? Look, I'm sorry,
It is you.
It's not me. Let go. Leave my office. Get out.
Peter!
Miss Evans, show this lady out. If you have trouble, summon the commissioner.
Please go now.
How long has Mr. Davenport been here?
Oh, quite a time. More than a year, I think.
Oh, God.
Helen hailed a taxi and followed Peter's car. When she arrived at Guthrie's offices, she was just in time to see the lift doors close on Peter's back. Something warned her not to ask for him. She noted down the floors at which the lift had paused and systematically began to search. And as she searched, Hamilton Guthrie and George Davenport began their conference.
An excellent speech, I thought. Absolutely first rate. Your point on single-mindedness struck me as particularly apt. Just what the nation needs these days. Utter dedication to the job in hand. Live it, eat it, sleep it, eh? What's the trouble, old man? Touch of the morning after, perhaps?
No. No, the speech was all right, I suppose.
Go on.
Oh, I don't know. Suddenly, in the middle of it, I thought, this is a lot of rubbish. I felt sick.
Oh, my dear chap, you must be down in the dumps. Allow me to pour you a drink. Whiskey? Gin?
Isn't it rather early?
Never too early for the hair of the dog.
Yes, I will have one. A small whiskey, please.
Mrs. Briggs, a small whiskey for our guest. Come in and pour it. Do you mind?
Yes, Mr. Guthrie.
I must tell you, I've just had the most bizarre experience. Ah, Mrs. Briggs.
Yes?
You don't by any chance happen to have a sister, do you?
Mrs. Briggs has no relatives, have you, Mrs. Briggs?
None.
It was most peculiar. A woman calling herself
Come
Helen.
Back here. Come here! You can't go in there!
Helen!
Diana! I thought you were in jail.
I was. I still am.
Who is this lady?
My sister.
But you swore.
When you need a job like I did, you swear to anything.
Suffering cats. No faith, no truth. Here, Davenport, drink this. Steady your nerve. Drink it, man.
Don't touch it.
Davenport, pull yourself together.
Helen. Helen.
Peter.
And you?
I'm Mrs. Briggs. Diana. And you are Peter Edwards.
Edwards. Yes. I'm Peter Edwards.
Damn and blast and flaming perdition! My dear Edwards, you are most fortunate in your friends.
Take me out of this place.
Come on.
And straightway, Peter Edwards and Helen Mackenzie went home. As they departed, Mrs. Briggs, Diana, stood watching them. And then, after an instant, herself limped towards the door.
Going somewhere, Mrs. Briggs?
Yes. Out of here.
Where had you in mind?
I thought I might go home.
Home? Are you joking? Home to old man Mackenzie with a record like yours?
Why not?
What leads you to imagine he'll have you?
He's my father.
I suppose someone has to be. Anyway, be seeing you, Mrs. Briggs.
Whatever else, you won't be doing that.
And he didn't. Furthermore, and contrary to what you might expect, Peter Edwards did not immediately resign from Mansfield International. He retained the name of Davenport and his managing directorship, and over the years was able to undo at least a part of Guthrie's handiwork. In later life, he returned to Mackenzie Developments Limited as a member of the board. I should add, for the sake of those whose sensibilities have been abraded, that he married Helen in the end. As for Hamilton Guthrie, after the events you've heard about, he underwent a brief time of discouragement, but several mornings later, as he shaved, he eyed his own reflection philosophically and remarked,
"Oh, well, never say die. Have our little setbacks. Also have a sort of indispensability. Mind you, at this point in my career, I might be well advised to set up in some other line. What's the word I want? Diversify."
Which is exactly what he did. These days he rents an even larger block than that in which we first discovered him, and he boasts the most extraordinary range of contacts.
"My dear Home Secretary, the elimination of irresponsible drug experimentation, associated it most certainly is with the damage to the youthful psyche, must have the support of all right-thinking people."
"Mr. Guthrie..."
"I would even go so far as to assert that..."
"Mr. Guthrie..."
"Excuse me just a moment. Yes, who the devil are you?"
"A humble reporter, Mr. Guthrie."
"Ah, the press?
I wonder if you would care to point some moral from your recent experiences. What lesson should we draw?"
"My dear sir, if it's education you're after, let me refer you to the Guthrie Foundation for..."
No. I mean this fellow Edwards. You fail, he gets away, and look at him, he never really raised a finger in his own defence. Don't you find that rather hard to take?"
"You've heard about it, then. My, you boys are on the ball. But I'm resilient. For every sheep that's found, 4 or 5 million fall over the cliff." "No, joking apart, I'll tell you. Edwards had relations."
"That's the moral, is it?"
"That's business. That's what counts. Relations."
"I see. Perhaps you'd care to make some final observation."
"Final? That's not a word I often use. However, ladies and gentlemen, as you have no doubt noticed, the Hamilton Guthrie organization is still going strong. Stronger, if possible, than ever. If you must have a moral, maybe that's it."
In The Guthrie Process by David Wade, the part of Hamilton Guthrie was played by William Fox, Peter Edwards by Nigel Anthony, Helen Mackenzie by Eve Rain, Sir Alistair Mackenzie by Duncan McIntyre, and Mrs. Briggs by Eva Stewart. The storyteller was Noel Howlett, and the production was by David H. Godfrey.